Switzerland and is written by Swiss author Johanna Spyri. We are reading Heidi tonight. As you may have guessed, this book was originally published in 1881 and was originally published in two separate parts. I'm lucky enough to have the full copy of it, and I'm excited to get to read it for you tonight. So, with that, I would like to invite you to find yourself a comfortable spot to snuggle up with your favorite blanket or your favorite pillow. Take a deep breath in and out while I read you to sleep. Heidi, Chapter 1, Up the Mountain to All Uncle. From the old and pleasantly situated village of Mayenfield, a footpath winds through green shady meadows to the foot of the mountains, which on this side look down from their stern and lofty heights upon the valley below. The land grows gradually wilder as the path ascends, and the climber has not gone far before he begins to inhale the fragrance of the short grass and sturdy mountain plants. Is steep and leads directly up to the summits above. On a clear, sunny morning in June, two figures might be seen climbing the narrow mountain path. One a tall, strong-looking girl, the other a child whom she is leading by the hand, and his little cheeks were so aglow with heat that the crimson color could be seen even through the dark, sunburnt skin. And this was hardly to be wondered at, for in spite of the hot June sun, the child was clothed as if to keep off the bitterest frost. She did not look more than 5 years old, yet as much. But what her natural figure was like, it would have been hard to say, for she had on apparently two, if not three, dresses, one above the other, and over these a thick red woolen shawl wound round about her, so that the little body presented a shapeless appearance, as, with its small feet shod in thick, nailed mountain shoes, it slowly and laboriously plodded its way up in the heat. The two must have left the valley a good hour's walk behind them when they came to the hamlet known as Dorfley, which is situated halfway up the mountain. Here the wayfarers met with greetings from all sides, some calling them from windows, some from open doors, others from outside. The elder girl was now in her old home. She did not, however, pause in her walk to respond to her friends' welcoming cries and questions, but passed on without stopping for a moment until she reached the last of the scattered houses of the hamlet. Here, a voice called to her from the door. "Wait a moment, Diet. If you are going up higher, I will come with you." The girl, thus addressed, stood still, and the child immediately let go of her hand and seated herself on the ground. "Are you tired, Heidi?" asked her companion. "No, I am hot," answered the child. "We shall soon get up to the top now. You must walk bravely on a little longer. Take good long steps, and in another hour we shall be sister left.
Yes, answered Deed. I am taking her up to Uncle, where she will stay.
The child stay up there with all of Uncle. You must be out of your senses, Deed. How could you think of such a thing? The old man, however, will soon send you and your proposal packing off home again. He cannot very well do that, seeing as he is her grandfather. He must do something for her. I have had the charge of the child till now, and I can tell you, Brenda, I am not going to give up the chance which has just fallen to me of getting a good place for her sake. It is for the grandfather now to do his duty by her. That would all be very well if he were like other people, asseverated Stout Barbell warmly. But you know what he is, and what he can do with a child, especially with one so young. The child cannot possibly live with him. But where are you thinking of going yourself? Extra good place awaits me, answered Deed. The people I'm going to were down at the Bass this summer, and it was part of my duty to attend upon their rooms. They would have liked then to take me away with them, but I could not leave. Now they are there again, and they have repeated their offer, and I intend to go. You may make up your mind to that.
I am glad I am not the child, exclaimed Burbell with a gesture of horrified pity. Not a creature knows anything about the old man up there. He will have nothing to do with anybody, and never sets his foot inside a church from one year's end to another. When he does come down once in a while, everybody clears out of the way of him and his big stick. The mere sight of him, his bushy eyebrows and his immense beard is alarming enough. He looks like any old heathen or an Indian, and few would care to meet him alone.
Well, and what of that? Said Deed in a defiant voice. He is the grandfather all the same, and must look after the child. He is not likely to do her any harm, and if he does, he will be answerable for it, not I.
I should very much like to know, continued Barbell in an inquiring tone of voice, what the old man has in his conscience that he looks as he does and lives up there in the mountain like a hermit, hardly ever allowing himself to be seen. All kinds of things are said about him. You, Deed, however, must certainly have learned a good deal concerning him from your sister. Am I not right?
Did, but I am not going to repeat what I heard. If it should come to his ears, I should get into trouble about it.
Now, Barbell had from long past been most anxious to ascertain particulars about all Uncle, as she could not understand why he seemed to feel such hatred towards his fellow creatures, and insisted on living alone, or why people spoke about him half in whispers. Isn't to say anything against him, and yet unwilling to take his part. Moreover, Barbell was in ignorance as to why all the people in Dwarfley called him Old Uncle, for he could not possibly be uncle to everybody living there. As, however, it was the custom, she did like the rest, and called the old man Uncle. Barbell had only lived in Dwarfley since her marriage, which had taken place not long before. Previous to that, her home had been Blown and Bredegal, so that tales that are afloat about him. I believe you know the whole story. Now, just tell me what is wrong with the old man, and if he was always shunned as he is now, and was always such a misanthrope. How can I possibly tell you whether he was always the same, seeing I am only 6 and 20, and he is at least 70 years of age? So you can hardly expect me to know much about his youth. If I was sure, however, that what I tell you would not go the whole round of Bradagow, I could relate all kinds of things about him. My mother came from Domlish, and so did he. Nonsense, Deed. What do you mean? Replied Barbel, somewhat offended. Gossip has not reached such a dreadful pitch in Bradagow as all that, and I am also quite capable of holding my tongue when it's necessary. Very well, then, I will tell you. But just wait a moment, said Deed in a warning voice, and she looked back to make sure that the child was not near enough to hear all that she was going to relate. But the child was nowhere to be seen, and she must have turned aside from following her companions sometime before, while these were too eagerly occupied with their conversation to notice it. Deed stood still and looked around her in all directions. The footpath wound a little here and there, but could nevertheless be seen along its whole length, nearly to Dorfley. No one, however, was visible upon it at this moment. I see where she is, exclaimed Barbel. Look over there. And she pointed to a spot far from the footpath. She is climbing up the slope yonder with the goat herd and his goats. I wonder why he is so late today bringing them up. It happens well, however, for us, for he can now see after the child, and you can better tell me your tale. Oh, as to the looking after, remarked Deed, the boy need not put himself out about that. She is not by any means stupid, 4 or 5 years, and knows how to use her eyes. She notices all that is going on, as I have often had occasion to remark, and this will stand her in good stead some day, for the old man has nothing beyond his 2 goats and his hut. Did he ever have more? Asked Barbel. He? I should think so indeed, replied Deed. He was owner once as far as Domlish. He was the elder of 2 brothers. The younger was a quiet, orderly man, but nothing could please the other but to play the grand gentleman and go driving about the country and mixing with bad company, strangers that nobody knew. He drank and gambled away the whole of his property. And when this became known to his mother and father, they died, one shortly after the other, of sorrow. The younger brother, who was also reduced to beggary, went off in his anger, no one knew whither, while Uncle himself, having nothing now left to him but his bad name, also disappeared. For some time, his whereabouts were unknown. Then, someone found out that he had gone to Naples as a soldier. After that, nothing more was heard of him for 12 or 15 years. At the end of that time, he reappeared in Domlish, bringing with him a young child whom he tried to place with some of his kinspeople. Every door, however, was shut in his face, for no one wished to have any more to do with him. Embittered by this treatment, he vowed never set foot in Domlish again, and
apprentice to a carpenter. He was a steady lad and kindly received by everyone in Dorfleet. The old man was, however, still looked upon with suspicion, and it was even rumored that he had been forced to make his escape from Naples, or it might have gone badly with him, for that he had killed a man, not in a fair fight, you understand, but in some brawl. We, however, did not refuse to acknowledge our relationship with him. My great-grandmother, on my mother's side, having been sister to his grandmother. So, we called him uncle. And, as through my father, we are also related to nearly every family in Dorfleet. He became known all over the place as uncle. And since he went to live on the mountain, he has gone everywhere by the name of all uncle. And what happened to Tobias? Asked Barbell, who was listening with deep interest. Wait a moment, I'm coming to that, but I cannot tell you everything at once, replied Dade. Tobias was caught, taught his trade in Mells, and when he had served his apprenticeship, he came back to Dorfleet and married my sister, Adelaide. They had always been fond of one another, and they got on very well together after they were married. But their happiness did not last long. Her husband met with his death only 2 years after their marriage, a beam falling upon him as he was working and killing him on the spot. They carried him home, and when Adelaide saw the poor, disfigured body of her husband, she was so overcome with horror and grief that she fell into a fever from which she never recovered. She had always been rather delicate and subject to curious attacks, during which no one knew whether she was awake or sleeping. And so, 2 months after Tobias had been carried to the grave, his wife followed him. Their sad fate was the talk of everybody far and near, and both in private and public, the general opinion was expressed that it was a punishment which Uncle had deserved for the godless life he had led. Some went so far even as to tell him so to his face. Our minister endeavored to awaken his conscience and exhorted him to repentance. But the old man grew only more wrathful and obdurate and would not speak to a soul, and everyone did their best to keep out of his way. All at once we heard that he had gone to live up the alm and did not intend ever to come down again. And since then, he has led a solitary life on the mountainside, at enmity with God and man. Mother and I took Adelaide's little one, then only a year old, into our care. When Mother died last year, they went down to the baths to earn some money. I paid old Ursula, who lives in the village just above, to keep and look after the child. I stayed on at the baths through the winter, for, as I could sew and knit, I had no difficulty in finding plenty of work. And early in the spring, the same family I had waited on before returned to Frankfurt, and again asked me to go back with them. And so, we leave the day after tomorrow. And I can assure you, it is an excellent place for me. And are you going to give the child over to the old man up there? It's a private
just reached the place I wanted, answered Burbill. I have something to say to the goatherd's wife, who does some spinning for me in the winter. So, goodbye, Deed, and good luck to you. Deed shook hands with her friend and remained standing while Burbill went towards a small, dark brown hut, for which stood a few steps from the path in the hollow that afforded it some protection. Situated halfway up the elm, reckoning from Dorley, and it was well that it was provided with some shelter, for it was so broken down and dilapidated that even then it must have been very unsafe as a habitation, for when the stormy south wind came sweeping over the mountain, everything inside it, doors and windows, shook and rattled. Such days as this, had the goatherd's dwelling been standing on the above exposed mountainside, it could not have escaped being blown straight down into the valley without a moment's warning. Here lived Peter, the 11-year-old boy, who every morning went down to Dorfley to fetch his goats and drive them up onto the mountain, where they were free to browse till evening on the delicious mountain plants. Then Peter, with his light-footed animals, would go running and leaping down the mountain again till he reached Dorfley, and there he would give a shrill whistle through his fingers, whereupon all the owners of the goats would come out to fetch home the animals that belonged to them. It was generally the small boys and girls who ran in answer to Peter's whistle, but they were none of them afraid of the gentle goats, and this was the only hour of the day through all the summer months that Peter had any opportunity of seeing his young friends, since the rest of his time was spent alone with the goats. He had a mother and a blind grandmother at home, it is true, but he was always obliged to start off very early in the morning, and only got home late in the evening from Dorfley, where he always stayed as long as he could, talking and playing with the other children. And so he had just time enough at home, and that was all, to swallow down his bread and milk in the morning, and again in the evening to get through a similar meal, lie down in bed, and go to sleep. His father, who had been also known as the goatherd, having earned his living as such when younger, had been accidentally killed while cutting wood some years before. His mother, whose real name was Brigitta, was always called the goatherd's wife for the sake of old association, while the blind grandmother was just grandmother to all the old and young. Sign of the children and the goats. Not a glimpse of them, however, was to be seen, so she climbed to a higher spot, whence she could get a fuller view of the mountain as it slipped beneath her to the valley. While, with ever-increasing anxiety on her face and in her movements, she continued to scan the surrounding slopes. Meanwhile, the children Peter knew many spots where all kinds of good food in the shape of shrubs and plants grew for his goats, and he was in the habit of leading his flock aside from the beaten track. The child, exhausted with the heat and the weight of her thick armor of clothes, panted and struggled after. She put all her clothes together in a tidy little heap, and then went jumping and climbing about to Peter and the goats as nimbly as any of the party. Peter had taken no heed of what the child was about when she stayed behind, but when she ran up to him in her new attire, his face broke out into a grin, which grew broader still as he looked back and saw the small heap of clothes lying on the ground until his mouth stretched almost from ear to ear. He said nothing, however. The child, able now to move at her ease, began to enter into conversation with Peter, who had many questions to answer, for his companion wanted to know how many goats he had, where he was going to with them, and what he had to do when he arrived there. At last, after some time, they and the goats approached the hut and came within view of Cousin Deed. Hardly had the latter caught sight of the little company climbing up towards her when she shrieked out, "Heidi, what have you been doing, and what a sight you have made of yourself, and where are your two frocks and the red wrapper, and the new shoes I bought, and the new stockings I knitted for you, everything gone, not a thing left. What can you have been thinking of, Heidi? Where are your clothes?" The child quietly pointed to a spot below on the mountainside and answered, "Down there." Deed followed the direction of her finger. She could just distinguish something lying on the ground with a spot of red on the top of it, which she had no doubt was the woolen wrapper. "You good for nothing little thing," exclaimed Deed angrily. "What could have put it into your head to do like that? What made you undress yourself? What do you mean by it?" "I don't want any clothes," said the child, not showing any sign of repentance for a past deed. "You wretched, thoughtless child, have you no sense in you at all?" continued Deed, scolding and lamenting. "Who is going to walk all that way down to fetch them? It's a good half hour's walk. Peter, you can go off and fetch them for me as quickly as you can, and don't stand there gaping at me as if you were rooted to the ground."
"I'm already past my time," answered Peter slowly, without moving from the spot where he had been standing, with his hands in his pockets, listening to Deed's outburst of dismay and anger. "Well, you won't get far if you keep only standing, as if your eyes were staring out of your head," was Deed's cross reply. "But see, you shall have something nice." And she held up a bright new piece of money to him that sparkled in the sun. Peter was immediately up and off down the steep mountainside, taking the shortest cut, and in an incredibly short space of time had reached the little heap of clothes, which he gathered up under his arm, and was back again so quickly that even Deed was obliged to give him a word of praise as she handed him the promised money. Peter promptly thrust it into his pocket, and his face beamed with delight, for it was not often that he was the happy possessor of such riches. "You can carry the things up for me as far as Uncle's, as you are going the same way," went Deed, who was prepared to continue a climb up the mountainside, which rose in a steep ascent immediately behind the governor's hut. Peter willingly undertook to do this, and followed after her on his bare feet, with his left arm fields still overgrown with beautiful grass and plants, above which were stonier slopes covered only with scrub that led gradually up to the steep, bare, rocky summits. Against the hut on the side looking towards the valley, Uncle had put a seat. Here he was sitting,
general.